Hi, everyone. This is Women Mean Business, the podcast from the Conferences for Women community, and I'm your host, Lisa Bennett. Today, I'm excited to say that we have a special guest who's going to offer simple, proven strategies to help us do something we don't do very often, which is relax a little bit. Courtney Carver's an expert in helping people get out of the trap so many of us feel of constantly needing to do more and more, better and better, faster and faster, and instead make choices that lead to a more meaningful life. The beloved author of Simple Ways to Be More with Less and the new delightful book, Soulful Simplicity. She's also one of the most popular speakers in the Conferences for Women community. Courtney, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So I'm going to start by admitting that I woke up this morning conscious of the fact that I was immediately thinking about all the things I need to do today for work and family and feeling stressed because there just aren't enough hours in the day. And here's the thing, it occurred to me that I think you know that feeling, even though you're on the other side of it. You used to work in advertising, not the most stress-free environment in the world. So can you share how you got from that life to the life you're leading now as a healthy lifestyle guru?
Sure. I definitely wouldn't refer to myself as a guru by any means.
I thought that would get you.
Yeah. I think, just like everyone else, I am a work in progress, and I definitely understand that feeling of, oh my gosh, how am I going to get all of this done? And I used to operate from that place. As you mentioned, when I was working in advertising and just going at an unsustainable speed. And the only reason I know that it's unsustainable is that I put it to the test and everything kind of came crashing down in, I guess it was the spring of 2006. I started to feel terrible and I was very worn out. And I had kind of experienced that many times before, but on top of that, I had a lot of vertigo and tingling in my hands and in my face, all symptoms I had had before, but this time they were all at once and kind of stopped me in my tracks. I was literally holding onto the wall during times of this just to stay steady.
Wow.
And after months of doctor's visits and neurological exams and just tests, I don't even remember how many different types of tests that I did. But after all of that, in July of 2006, I was diagnosed with MS. And while I can't say for certain that the stress of my lifestyle caused that disease, I know for sure that it contributed to relapses, exacerbations, and to just not feeling well overall.
So, I mean, that's a heck of a wake-up call, right? And I think that many of us are masters in thinking that when we hear something like that, that, well, you know, big bad things like a diagnosis won't happen to us as a result of stress. And, you know, maybe it won't, but why is it important, do you think, for everybody to think seriously about how we want to deal with the stressors in our life?
Well, for starters, I think that we're all delivered many wake-up calls every single day. And while they might not be, you know, you have MS or some other condition, we're getting these messages like, things aren't working, I'm not feeling well, I wish things were different, I can't do this anymore. But because we're so busy, we don't listen to it. And even if we hear it clearly, we stuff it down with more obligation and more, so that we don't have to address it because, I mean, quite frankly, change is scary. Even if you're in the middle of something that feels unbearable, at least you know how to do that. And often that's the easier choice at first. And that's the camp I fell into. But the thing about wake-up calls is that they just keep getting louder and louder and louder until, like, me, I just couldn't ignore it anymore. And at first, of course, I was really scared and didn't know what to do or what to expect. But pretty soon after the diagnosis, I started to feel really lucky that I had an invitation to pause and reassess and figure out how I might live my life better.
I'm curious, is there anything with this amount of time that's passed? Is there anything that you think would have been really helpful for you to know when you were in the midst of, ignoring the wake-up calls? Is there anything you might have learned, someone might have said that could have gotten your attention at that point?
I'm thinking about that. I don't think so. I mean, I think it had to happen that way for me. But if I had known, of course, that there is a different way and that I could have been happier and healthier doing it differently, and that I didn't need to meet all of the goals and expectations that I had for myself and that I thought everyone else had for me, and that I didn't have to prove myself and that everything would be okay, I probably could have avoided that wake up call. But what do they say about hindsight? Hindsight, yeah, yeah. 2020 or something like that, right?
Yeah. Well, it's very interesting because, the lessons that you get from an experience like that are so profound, right? And I'm just kind of thinking, there may be somebody out there listening right now who is juggling the wake-up calls and, you never know when your words might touch somebody at exactly the right moment. So one of the things that I'm sensitive to on this topic for our audience is that there is a little bit of a gender gap with stress, apparently, that women tend to experience more stress than men, according to the American Psychological Association. Have you ever thought about that? Any ideas why that might be?
Well, I think it's because we run the world. For starters, I mean, we're running our households, taking care of children, doing all the work stuff, trying our best to prove our equality, which seems absolutely insane in 2019, but it is part of what people are facing, what women are facing. Yes, men have stress. Of course they do. And I am sure that there are many situations where things are very equal in a household or a company. But overall, I don't think that's the case. I think that we probably worry more. I think we have a harder time turning it off, turning that stress and worry and concern off. We make it our jobs to take care of everyone around us, putting ourselves usually at the bottom of the list, if we even make the list. Mm. And I sense that's changing, but I know it's changing slowly.
Yeah, as I was listening to your story, I thought it really is a rather radical thing to do, to say, okay, I'm going to pause on everybody's expectations here and take more control of my life and design it as you have. For many women, it seems that it's hard to even admit when we're feeling maxed out or overwhelmed. Do you have suggestions about how women can get over that? Because it can be a real obstacle in certain cultures.
Well, we want to be strong and let everyone know that we've got it all handled, and we try to do it all while smiling. But when we're doing that, we're really stepping outside of ourselves and faking it. And that works for a little while, but it starts to break you down, I think, when you're living outside of your heart, when you are acting in a way that you genuinely don't feel. So for that reason alone, I think it's very important. But also because when you talk about what you're experiencing, you give other people permission to share their reality as well. And what you find in that process is that you're not alone. We're all struggling.
Right.
So I think it is important to, I'm trying to think of a great way to do it. I mean, the first thing I would say is you have to care a little bit less about what other people think, and eventually a lot less. But in the beginning, you just have to care a little bit less about what people think and test the waters and see what happens. I don't think that admitting your weakness is going to be a downfall by any means. If anything, it's very freeing. And it allows you to begin to see what you need to do to fix things.
And it's not necessarily even a weakness, right? It could just be a sign that, you know, you're actually in a situation where it's too much.
And correct. But maybe it feels like a weakness to you. Uh-huh. And But I always feel like talking about that is really a sign of strength in mm-hmm. every case.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I've noticed when I'm kind of feeling in the thick of it with stress, and you know, it feels like, okay, I know I'm stressed. I know what would be helpful would be to pause, and you know, go for a walk or go for a swim or something. But it feels like a luxury in that moment, and I think I have to just push on through, even if I'm no longer doing my best work.
I think that's such a weird phenomenon because I did the same thing. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so busy. I can't even eat lunch today. I just have to plow right through because there's so much to accomplish. Now I know only after many years of experimenting with this, because it didn't happen for me immediately by any means. But every time when I take that pause, when I take a walk, when I sit down and meditate, when I eat a slow lunch, I'm so much more creative, productive, calm, which all results in better health and better relationships. I'm just a better person to be around. So it feels counterproductive to take that 30 minutes or an hour or whatever it is, but it always translates into better work
right.
and more happiness.
So from what you said, maybe the key is just to test it, right? So that you then get the positive reinforcement.
Absolutely. I think one of the best things we can do is treat things like this as an experiment. Mm-hmm. Be open and curious about it. And for instance, in this case, I would say for the next work week, every single day, I'm going to take an extra half hour during lunch, or I'm going to take 20 minutes mid-morning and leave the office or my workspace and take a walk or breathe or whatever it is. And I'm just going to see what happens. I'm going to see if I get more done or less done. I'm going to see if anyone notices. And then I can use that information that I learn and decide if I want to make a permanent change in my life.
Mm. I love that. That's a beautiful way to think about it. Speaking of beautiful, let's talk about your new book, Soulful Simplicity. I was really struck by the passion in reader reviews online that I saw. You know, people were so enthusiastic, finding it deeply hopeful. I saw many people talk about it being life-changing. Yet the strategies that you offer are, appropriately enough, pretty simple. So I'd love to get into those strategies first through looking at that, your choice of that first word, soulful simplicity. Why soulful?
Well, simplicity on its own, I think, is a wonderful tool in figuring out what matters to you and reducing stress, having clean countertops and organized bookshelves. But I had tried the simplicity thing on its own for a long time. You know, I did the spring cleaning thing and I did a lot of decluttering, but I always filled the spaces back up, whether they be on my calendar or in my home. And this layer of soulfulness was what made all the difference and what made simplicity stick this time. And what I mean by that is that my heart was in the game. I had a reason to simplify. It wasn't just because I read a fun article in a magazine, and it wasn't because I was just frustrated with all my stuff one afternoon. It was because I needed to change my life so I could be healthy. And that was a strong enough reason to continue and to experiment and keep going and see what worked for me. And it's still working for me.
That's good. For those who don't, you know, don't have as profound motivation as that, right? Staying healthy. Are there other techniques that you would suggest for how to get your heart in the game so that the strategies simply do stick for a better quality of life?
Well, I'd say everyone has that motivation to be healthy, whether or not they have MS or anything else. I mean, we all want, we all know what the difference is between a day where we feel amazing and a day that we feel like crap. I mean, it's just much harder to do anything when you don't feel well, but there could be many other reasons. So what I recommend is identifying why it is that you might want to simplify your life and putting it on paper, writing it down. So maybe it's health. Maybe it's that you want to be less stressed. Maybe it's that you want to save money and pay off debt. Whatever it is, there's no right or wrong answer there. But having that conviction pulls your heart in. So it needs to be something that's, I guess, heart-based and not ego-based.
That's a great point.
And that could go for anything. I mean, if you're, for instance, if you want to quit sugar, if you're quitting sugar to lose weight, to fit into an outfit for a reunion, your ego is all in, but your heart says, I don't believe you. You know, this is fake news. I'm not buying it. But if you want to quit sugar because you believe that it will help you sleep better, prevent cancer, or, you know, any other very meaningful reason, then your heart is in the game. Right. So I would come at it from that approach, because the immediate reason that you think of may be ego-based. Mm-hmm. And so really just think about, what do I most want? And allow yourself to kind of journal about that. And then you'll come up with a few ideas. And those ideas are going to change over time. But writing it down matters.
Yeah. It's interesting, you know, just hearing you say that, it feels relaxing, you know, to consider. So I do want to pivot to some of your many practical strategies and, you know, in particular, what you might suggest to folks to try over the next 24 hours. And one of them that I know is important to you is about concerns of morning routine. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. My morning routine is one of the most powerful habits that I have. And it's like one habit full of many tiny habits. So I created it through habit stacking, and everyone listening is probably a habit stacker. You know, if you brush your teeth and then floss your teeth, or if you use shampoo and then conditioner and then body wash in the shower, those are little pockets of habit stacking. And with a morning routine, you can actually, and anybody can start this immediately, starting, you know, as soon as they wake up tomorrow, pick two activities that fuel you in some way, fuel your body or your heart, mind, soul, and do each of those activities for only 5 minutes. So for example, maybe you want to journal for 5 minutes and then you want to read for 5 minutes, or meditate for 5 minutes and drink a cup of tea for 5 minutes. The activities themselves, as long as they work for you, great. There's no right or wrong in choosing how you want to spend your time. The key is to really start small. So only 5 minutes per activity. You'll want to do it longer, but hold back and then add 1 minute a week to your activities. And I know everybody kind of just cringed right now, like only 1 minute, like that, that's nonsense. But what happens is you make the change sustainable. Instead of doing this whole go big or go home thing, you really chunk it down to something that is so small that you really can't say no to it. And after a few weeks, you've built a substantial routine that might be 15 to 20 or 30 minutes long. And from there, you can decide if you want to add more time or more activities. But even if your morning routine is only 5 minutes, that's enough if you're doing it consistently. So I recommend, with all things, consistency over intensity. With that time that you're showing up for yourself first, you're reminding yourself that you're important, and you're important to yourself, that you're important to other people, and that if you serve yourself first, you'll be able to serve everything in your life in a much more meaningful way.
Well, it's a real lovely way to balance, you know, what you noted before, that women tend to have everybody on the list and themselves at the bottom, if at all. And what you're saying is this sets you up for the day by reversing that, by beginning with yourself.
Yes, start with you. And I know a lot of people might be thinking, I could never do that. I get up at the crack of dawn as it is, and I've got kids and I have to get out the door. And if there's a lot of reasons why you might think you can't do it. I started my morning routine when I was, you know, working full time in advertising, bringing my daughter to school, doing everything. And I didn't think I had time either, but I found 5 minutes.
Right.
And then I found 10. And for a long time, it was only 30 minutes. And then as my life changed, my morning routine increased.
Mm-hmm. That's appealing. You know, in your book, you offer a lot of strategies on simplifying all different areas, of course, right? Diet, debt, clutter. I'd love your thoughts about work. How do we simplify our work lives if we're in a position that is demanding, but, you know, let's say we love it, right? How do we bring this kind of soulful simplicity to that?
One thing we can do immediately is pull back a little bit. I think that most of us are in the habit of giving our all. We give everything to our work, to our coworkers, to our projects, because we love it, because we care about it, and because we care about, you know, how we show up for things. So you're probably giving or attempting to give 100% or 110% if that's possible. What would it look like if you pulled back 10% and tomorrow you only give 90% and you reserve that 10% so that you have a little more energy left at the end of the day or more mind space to consider other things or whatever it is? Just pull back a little bit. I've worked with a lot of people that have tried this and no one notices because you are already giving your all. But when you do that, then you have nothing left to give. And there is more to your life than just your work day.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can all agree on that.
Right.
So pulling back a little bit, and I know it's hard to measure 10%, but maybe you're not doing that last email check of the day, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or you're delegating something that you would normally feel like you have to have your hands in. And when you delegate something, just let it go. Like, don't half let it go. I think that's something, a trap that we fall into. We delegate something, but we keep our hands all over it because we want to make sure it's done our way. Let it go. Let it be someone else's way. It's all going to work out.
You can really tell how you have lived this, you know?
Oh, I've been there.
I saw an interesting phrase of yours about, I think I have this right, instead of becoming your work, let your work become you. Do I have that right?
I think what I said was, instead of becoming your work, choose work that becomes you.
Ah.
And that really came from me working in an industry that I became. I mean, I became a different person to work in that field. And what I mean by that is I was very outgoing. I attended a lot of events. I did a lot of networking and schmoozing. And in the person that I actually am, I'm not that. I'm an introvert. I don't like doing any of those things. But I kind of rose to the occasion, if you will, to become my work. And that worked for a while. But that's another example of that fake smile. I was stepping outside of myself. And now that I'm doing things that really are me or that become me, work that becomes me, I'm so much happier and effective in my work.
It's wonderful. You know, it's so easy to talk with you about this, and it's such an important topic. There are many, many things I'd love to be able to continue to ask you about, but we are coming to the close here. So I just want to ask you for your final thoughts You know, if you have just a couple minutes to give what you think is the most important advice on this topic, what would that be?
I think this advice would apply to this or any other change that you want to make in your life. You know, so often we look far ahead at the finish line and we think, that's going to take forever. I could never get there. I don't have time for this. But every big change is the result of hundreds of tiny changes. And they all matter. They all count. So if it's starting with a 5-minute morning routine or decluttering one small corner of a room each day, whatever that is, just be consistent with your tiny changes. And eventually they will unfold into changes you might not even anticipate.
Yeah. So that's wonderful advice. I am going to try it with the morning routine tomorrow. And I am thrilled to say that because I know our listeners have other questions, you will be doing a Facebook Live on the Conferences for Women Facebook page on April 30th. So a wonderful opportunity for folks to ask their specific questions of you. Thank you for doing that.
I can't wait.
Hey, and thanks so much for this today. Very much appreciate your thoughts. And listeners, if you haven't already done so, please do subscribe to Women Mean Business to receive future episodes like next month's, which I know you won't want to miss. We'll be talking with the Latina media dynamo and women's empowerment advocate, Nelly Galan, author of the New York Times best-selling book, Self-Made. Thank you, everyone. And thank you, Courtney, for joining us.